You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, June 30th, 2010. This is episode 138, Wells Tech Road Trip, Liverpool, New York. Welcome back to the Wells Tech Podcast. We are headed for a release of Wednesday, June 30th, although we're the week before, because live in studio for the very first time in the luxurious Wells Tech Podcast studios is my podcasting partner, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
2.5 years of podcasting. We actually do it face-to-face today.
Isn't that amazing? So it took us till episode 138 for us to be in the same place at the same time, looking across the desk at each other and saying, boy, this is unique.
Hopefully it doesn't vex our presentation.
So I'm sure all the listeners are eager to know why in the world you are in Milwaukee after all these years.
Lucky girl to be in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Actually, I dusted off the camp desk because my family's vacationing up at Camp Phillip this week, trying to enjoy some sunshine and avoid thunderstorms, and took a day to head down to the Senate Administration Building and see some wonderful people that I hadn't seen in 3 years.
Yeah, we took a team photo.
Yeah.
The whole thing. Yeah, lots of hugs, and boy, Sally lives.
Good stuff.
She's not just behind the computer screen and the video screen or the email. So, Very good to have you. We are going to talk about, we're going to continue, first of all, our road trip, and this week we're going to head out to
Liverpool, New York, so Liverpool, East Coast.
North Atlantic District, yes, and talk to Pastor Jeremiah Gum about blogging. And blogging almost seems pedestrian these days because it's been around so long, but I think still a pretty valuable ministry tool.
Absolutely. I think, I don't know about you, Martin, but I certainly get a lot of questions about pastoral blogging, you know, is this something I should consider? You know, what direction should I go in terms of the mechanics of setting up a blog?
And right.
Pastor Gum is just an awesome interview to address a lot of those questions.
Yeah, because he's been doing it for almost over two years. Yeah, absolutely. And there aren't a lot of pastor blogs out there across the Synod, at least that I'm aware of. There are a few, and I think they're growing. But I think, as you mentioned, I think pastors are trying to figure out its use and how do I do this, and do I have time for it? And those are all great questions. Just a couple of tips. I maintain a blog, and obviously those are mostly related to technology. And we obviously have the Wells Tech blog, which revolves around our podcast. You have a family blog, right?
That's right. I started blogging back in 2001, I think. Mm-hmm. So before blogging was really called blogging or whatever.
Right.
But it's been a great way to stay in touch with people and just kind of regularly update people on what's going on in the lives of our family.
Yep. So. A couple things about blogs. I think they need to be thematic. They need to be around a particular topic, whether that be family news or, as we'll hear from Pastor Jeremiah Gum, kind of a blog for Lutheran pastors. But I think there are other ways that a pastor might want to use a blog, and that would be to connect with the congregation or to use it for outreach. I think a while back we talked with Pastor Mark Cares from Idaho, whose blog is about outreach to Mormons. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of directions that you can go, all kinds of technologies you could use as well. I think in general, one reason I encourage blogs is it creates new content. And creating new content on your site is a great way to raise your ranking for Google. And it likes to find that new stuff and will point people there. Plus, you're probably blogging about, you know, maybe current events, topics that are trendy, which Google also likes. So that would be another characteristic of a blog. It's not a web page per se. It's not brochureware. It's a journal. You know, it's informal.
I think many people that I talk to that actually are serious bloggers, do it on a regular basis, find that, you know, they maybe started to reach out to other people to serve that purpose, but that personal reflection time and actually taking the time to put things in writing benefits them greatly.
Yep.
And there's a lot of personal growth that can come about by the discipline of blogging.
Right. So, it can be therapeutic. It can be very spiritual.
Lots of advantages.
Obviously. Obviously, there are cautions, and you know, obviously, when you're putting stuff out on the web, it's very public, so you want to obviously be aware of that too. But lots of positives, and as we'll hear in this interview with Jeremiah, I think he is enjoying it and views it definitely as a ministry.
Absolutely.
So let's listen to our interview with Pastor Jeremiah Gumm from Cross of Christ Lutheran in Liverpool, New York. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast is Pastor Jeremiah Gumm from Liverpool, New York at Cross of Christ. Good morning, Jeremiah.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. And you serve a couple congregations there, correct?
Yeah, I serve a Mission Restart Cross of Christ in Liverpool, New York, near Syracuse. And then we've daughtered a congregation up in Watertown, New York, serving primarily military, but a lot of other people living up there as well.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been there?
5 years. I was assigned here from the seminary.
Ah, okay. And are you? I assume you're not from the Northeast originally?
No, I actually grew up mostly out west. My father's a pastor and served a number of congregations out in Wyoming and North Dakota and out in that direction. So grew up out west, I guess you could say.
And have you kind of acclimated yourself to New York? Now, Liverpool is upstate, correct?
Yes. Yeah. It's. I guess sometimes we've described it as much like the Midwest, except with a very New York East Coast flair. It's not. It's not New York City, but you know, folks from the Midwest find where we are around here in Syracuse very, very similar.
Mm-hmm. And in our pre-show conversation or pre-recording conversation, we talked about the fact that this is the other Watertown. But you've heard that the Watertown that our synodical listeners probably know and love in Watertown, Wisconsin, is a has some connection with the New York Watertown.
Yeah, it seems that some of the folks who are from Watertown, New York, may have possibly been. Some of the early settlers in Watertown, Wisconsin, they have the same paper name. Some of the streets are laid out the same.
Mm-hmm.
They have lots of hills around there.
Do they have Mullins?
They don't have Mullins. No, they don't.
Murals on every
okay,
building or whatever.
That's right. Then the Watertown in Wisconsin has their own claim to fame. So.
Yep.
And Zwigs. Mullins and Zwigs, yes. And, of course, Luther Prep.
That's right.
So okay. I love these road trip opportunities.
That's right.
A real vision of New York here.
That's right. So we are in the North Atlantic District, for those of you district challenged. And North Atlantic is one of our smaller districts, but no less important. You just had a district convention, and something happened there that changed your life a little bit, right?
Yeah. I was elected to serve as the new district secretary.
Uh-huh.
So,
and you sound really excited about that.
it's a new challenge that I'm looking forward to serving in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I've had other opportunities to serve on different commissions and committees in the district, but it's a new challenge I'm looking forward to. It's just a little daunting because it's, you know, a much greater responsibility than the other tasks I had in the past. So.
Mm-hmm. And normally, you know, in larger districts, you've got to be a little more longer in the tooth to get into some of those roles. But maybe they're looking for, you know, some youth and vitality. And obviously, the district is a little bit smaller. So I think that's a great opportunity for you.
Yeah. I actually vicared in the Southern Conference of our district down in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and then so I was there. So I know a lot of, you know, and then serving up here in the Colonial North Conference for the last 5 years. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we all in our district, it's small enough, we all know each other pretty well.
Hopefully technology will be a friend to you in that new responsibility that you have. And we certainly wanted to talk to you today because we know that you're a friend of technology in terms of blogging, which was the topic of our show today, pastoral blogging. And you have your own blog. Maybe you could give us just a little bit about that blog and what the address is and how long it's been out there and that kind of thing.
In January 2008, it was actually intentionally started right around the Festival of St. Timothy, which is the 24th of January.
Of course.
Everyone knows that.
Doesn't everybody know that? Yes.
Right. Well, the blog itself is called The Shepherd Study. The URL is shepherdstudy.wordpress.com. And the point of this blog is meant to be a way for a place for support and encouragement for busy Lutheran shepherds. Now, that could be, if you read the blog, it's primarily geared toward Lutheran pastors, but it could be, I know there are teachers and staff ministers who read it, as well as leaders from other congregations. And I do know that lay people get get a lot out of it too as well. It's a place where I try to provide resources. I do a lot of reading, so I like to share some of the things that I find there that maybe other busy Lutheran shepherds don't get a chance to read or look at or really dig into, so I get to share that with them. And so, being that the Festival of St. Timothy is a time when we give thanks for the public ministry, and it's a time when, you know, especially for encouraging those who are either studying for the ministry or serving in the ministry, that, you know, I kind of timed it at that time as, hey, that's a good time to start. So so it's been going about, since January 23rd, 2008 was when I launched it. And since that time, Lord's blessed the blog. I've had about 64,000 visits to the blog since that time.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And it's been... it's been kind of neat because it's I do have members who read it, and it's available. You can actually, through our church's website, if you click on the page to meet our pastor, you can have access to my blog there. But also I use the I know that it has provided resources, quotes, encouragement, stuff like that for other pastors all over the country. Mostly Wells pastors, but I know even some in like Missouri Synod and, you know, just broader, a broader group than even in our own church body have found some worth in following my blog. In fact, even some Anglican pastors.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's been kind of interesting just who I've interacted with.
Okay.
Through my blog, or have found my blog worthwhile or worth reading. Mm-hmm. So I kind of see it as a place where someone can go to, and if they're looking for, you know, I have some resource reviews there. I have, if you were to take a closer look at the blog, you can see where, you know, there's access to blogs I'd recommend reading, other links I've found, different categories, which generally are areas of different areas of ministry or theology or, you know, other things, even, you know, sometimes miscellaneous stuff. Every once in a while I even put some goofy on there. But basically it's a place that I'm, you know, it's always been my hope that people who would read it would find encouragement there, and that kind of like a pastor's study, you know, where it gives him an opportunity to step away from the busyness of ministry to gain some insight from the, you know, from the resources that he has. Maybe I'm big on church history, so I like to get stuff out there about from the history of the church, finding encouragement from God's word, and also a place where, you know, sharing ideas or things, neat things that are found out there. And I've had an opportunity to share quite a bit where people say, hey, could you put this on your blog? And I actually have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, we appreciate the love you show the Wells Tech podcast. I see us on the blog roll there. You got some other great resources there, so it's not just kind of your, you know, what's on your mind, but it can act as a resource and kind of a launch pad for, you know, other Lutheran stuff that might be that might be of interest. What, you know, how do you go about picking what you're going to write about? Do you maintain kind of a list of things that are on your mind that you want to blog about? Do you sit in your office and you think, you know, kind of with a blank slate, what am I going to write about now? Explain the process a little bit, if another pastor might want to do the same thing.
One of the best suggestions I received early on from a classmate of mine who's a pastor down in El Paso who also does blogging, and he was kind of Pastor Johan Cowie is his name, and he actually helped me with kind of getting this going as far as what to do, because I knew he had some experience with this. And one of the things he suggested, and I've seen from other resources, is keeping kind of a notebook of ideas.
Yeah.
Or just a place, you know, because things come along and I'm nowhere near a computer. Like, hey, that would be neat to put on a blog, you know, write up a post. The challenge that I've found for myself is just kind of the things come up. And, of course, with the busyness of ministry, I'm not necessarily able to write about it. So I might write it down and say, okay, write about this at another time. Because oftentimes, depending on the subject of what the post would be, it could be used or put out there later. And so, you know, that that's kind of how I do it. So, I have about 2 years' worth of ideas, and I cross things out, and I go or tweak them, or I start a post, and because of the platform that I use, I can save it as a draft and then come back to it later. I've done that too. So,
do you try to adhere to a certain schedule? Is that part of the ability to gain an audience, is blogging on a regular schedule, or has that ever been a priority for you?
I try to, if I have a schedule, I try to do it maybe on a weekly basis, particularly maybe writing on my day off on Mondays. But other things come up, or, you know, I can send out a post much quicker and it go, you know, at another time during the week, and I decide, okay, you know, I send that out or time it right, but usually try to go on a weekly basis, because one of the things with blogging that's important to keep in mind is that there continues to be new content that's going out. It doesn't have to be every single day. Even, you know, the readers that I have, as far as the ones who follow this blog, I know, you know, they're usually pretty busy themselves, and so they're pretty forgiving if it's not, you know, if I'm not loading their news reader or their inbox. Yes. They're happy with that. But I usually try to stick to, if possible, try to get something, at least one post out a week. If I can get more out, you know, than because of pertinent things, then I'll do that. But yeah, I try to stick to about once a week.
Mm-hmm. So in general, the decision that you made to start blogging, Did you think it would, is it kind of what you expected? Has it been a positive thing in your ministry?
I think, yeah, it's been very positive. The idea actually came, I had another friend of mine who used to live out here in the North Atlantic District, and she helped me kind of come up with this idea initially, and I had never done this before, but blogging had always kind of intrigued me. And I always have, from reading and other resources I've had contact with, or a lot of the resources I shared, you know, or that came through the Wells Digital Outreach seminars and stuff, I would always, you know, I could tell someone about it, but this is a way that I could share it with a whole lot more people, with many more people, actually, all over, not just here or regionally or talking on the phone, but, you know, really worldwide. I mean, I've had people that I've written to back and forth in, you know, in Europe, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, and so it's kind of a way to get that out there. And one of the things too is about up until the time before I started blogging, I got the impression that a lot of the Wells blogs that were by Wells people out there often took a very negative tone. Were tearing down this or that. And so one of the primary goals of my blog too was to provide something constructive and encouraging that would be out there for not only to present our church body and confessional Lutheranism in a good light, but also something that would build up and encourage and be of use, so that people see this out on the web. There or, you know, they're out there in the world, they may not even know who we are, but this is one way to present the gospel and present confessional Lutheranism in a very clear and positive light. Mm-hmm. So, and so that's, you know, it's how things kind of got started. since that time, I mean, it's been neat because I'll have people come to me, hey, I was reading your blog. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, all right.
Cool.
You know, and I don't even know about it. There are a number of different ways to make sure to get the word out about it. I've let people know and connecting with other Wells blogs or other blogs out there, and then they publicize posts or I publicize posts, and suddenly, you know, the audience is getting bigger of who's actually reading it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's kind of that basic technique of we're all trying to, a basic blog practice is trying to drive people to your site to read it. And
right.
When you're out there and you're linking up with others.
You write for people to read, right?
Exactly. You know, and so, some other thing too is just making sure that what's written is written well. And,
oh, sure.
You know, I have a policy. The only policy I really have in my blog is a no ranting policy.
Mm-hmm.
I basically said to people, you know, I basically have out there, if you want to rant and go off about something on this blog, you know, on a post or about something out there, there are plenty of other blogs you can go to.
Mm-hmm.
Here it's, you know, kind of a... And one time I wrote a post that I ranted about something. And then I felt so bad about it, I removed the post, and then I wrote one saying, I broke my own policy here, so...
Right. That's cool. That sounds like, Jeremiah, that this is not just a hobby, but it's a ministry. And you treat it as such, and I think you it's obviously evident from reading it that you do feel that it's, you know, a part of your ministry and something valuable to you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah.
So I'm always interested in the technical side of things. I wondered if you could give us a tour of behind the scenes. What did it take to get your blog started? What kind of software are you using, and why did you choose that particular software? And you know, just how easy is it if someone wanted to get started with blogging today? You know, would this be the route that you would recommend, or do you have misgivings about going this way, or what?
I think the route that I went is I couldn't see a better route right now, at least for the price I pay for it, which is free.
Nothing, right?
WordPress.com. Yeah. and WordPress.com is something. WordPress.com is something that is probably one of the best. I did a lot of research on it, just comparing the different. You know, there's Typepad and Blogger and WordPress, and I think there were some other ones out there I checked out as well. And just kind of, saw a lot of good things said about WordPress.com. WordPress.org is the pay version, which you can do even more with. But WordPress.com does a really good job of providing some really nice templates that can look very professionally done. It's really easy to set up, and you can basically make it what you want. I mean, and the thing is, with my blog, I've kind of tweaked things here and there, added things here and there over the course of time, but it really didn't take much to set it up. You know, I would say probably maybe over the course of, I mean, once I got it started, you know, and getting some, you know, like the header picture that's there from the, and just, it's very easy. It can have you set up, like, if you want to put your recent posts up there, recent comments, top posts, there, and then there are other what they call widgets, little boxes that are in the menus along the sidebar, and it's been very easy to set up, you know. And I'm one who likes to just do the trial and error thing and see how it looks, and so it wasn't very hard for me to actually get something set up like this.
So for our listeners that are inspired by your experience today, they could finish up the podcast and head over to WordPress.com and have a blog literally probably in 10 minutes time if they were inclined to set up a blog there.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just love to hear you describe it, because I think, Martin, you and I would probably say the same thing about the Wells Tech podcast. When we started, we kind of had a vision of where it was going, but we've been excited to grow the resources there, to have a resource-sharing blog like what you're describing, Pastor Gum, and be able to look back on those resources and refer people to them and that kind of thing. It just becomes a really valuable tool.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the more work that's put into it, the more the resources are available on that site, you know, and can refer back, or, you know, it's kind of neat at certain times of year I can see certain posts that I've written that always seem to pop up. One of the key things with blogging is the tags that you add to each post, and I tend to go overboard on the tags, but the thing is that way it's a lot easier to find the posts that I'm writing for people out there on the internet. And also at the same time, writing on a regular basis also keeps the blog higher up in Google searches and so on, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's neat just to see the interaction and the people who, you know, and how easy it is. And it could be a little overwhelming at first, but WordPress does a really good job of providing help in, like, forums and support pages they have that, you know, how do I do this, or how do I, and I did a lot of that, you know, just going through that, or following other, you know, some other tips I got from elsewhere, and then figuring out how to put them up on the WordPress site. Mm-hmm. So
Jeremiah, have you thought about where you go from here? Is it just more of the same, or you have other ideas, other blogs that you'd like to think about, you know, maybe crafting that would take a little bit different approach? What's in the future for you?
I know that one of the things we've talked about in our congregation is possibly offering a blog of some kind that would provide a little bit of a devotional thought to the congregation, as far as maybe talking about the upcoming lessons for the service or the sermon. Yeah. That's been one primarily that I've thought of and have discussed with some members. It's just kind of one of those I don't know as far as time goes and trying to fit it in right now, but it is definitely something I think we could see happening on our radar, that there's growing interest for something like that in the congregation. Mm-hmm. So we have a very spread out congregation, all central and northern New York. So you have technology plays a very important role in how we do ministry out here.
Right. So certainly a valuable communications tool, and it sounds like you found a niche here, and you're certainly leveraging it. And boy, as a blogger myself, I really applaud your consistency, because I will go probably a lot longer than I should between blog posts, and you've been very consistent, and I think that's real important to maintaining an audience. So. Job well done, and blessings on your continued work here, and obviously your ministry there in Liverpool, New York. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Again, our thanks to Jeremiah for taking the time with us. I think he went about it the right way. He had an idea, and he stuck with it. And that is something I really respect, because it does take a discipline to blog as often as he does. And when you do that, you do build an audience if you have something valuable to say.
Yeah, and for all those pastors that are listening in the audience and others as well, you know, he mentioned how easy it is to get started. So maybe today's the day. It's definitely not... what did he call the Feast of St. Timothy today?
Right.
But no better day than today to give it a try, and the cost is definitely worthy of my pocketbook say it's free. So
yeah, lots of, and you don't just have to use WordPress. There's all kinds of free blogging tools out there, but WordPress is definitely one that's been there for a long time, and you can look at Jeremiah's site and recognize that there's quality there.
Absolutely.
The design as well as the content. So. Mm-hmm. So consider that, and it's not just something that pastors can do. Teachers could obviously do this, or people in other areas of ministry. Obviously a tool that could be used in a lot of different ways.
Before we get off the phone with Pastor Gum, he did mention a couple of resources that we want to include in the show notes. A book that he read before he got started was called The Blogging Church by Brian Bailey, and we'll find a link and include that in the show notes. Take from it what you find of interest. I haven't read it myself, but a resource that he wanted to share. And also he follows a blog called dailyblogtips.com. With just some interesting tips for blogging in general. So, again, look for those links in the show notes at wellstech.wells.net.
Very good. And again, thanks, Jeremiah, for your time and blessings on your work there in the other Watertown as well. Moving on to our picks of the week. Sally, you still get to go first, even though you're right here in studio.
Well, thank you very much.
Ladies first.
Thought it was an appropriate time of year, as many of our teachers are out on summer vacation and looking toward the new school year, that we talk a little bit about calendars that are available online. A question I often get from teachers is resources for school year planning. And there's one in particular, a site called Vertex, which gives free academic calendar templates that work in Microsoft Excel, easy downloads, and they've updated those templates for the 2010-2011 school year. So I've pointed to that in the past, but what really reminded me of Vertex was an article I read on MakeUseOf.com, 10 Quick Ways to Print Calendars Online. And they do list Vertex as one of the options, but they have listed here a lot of different free printable calendars, a great resource list that I made sure to tag in Delicious so I wouldn't lose it. And perhaps you have a need to print a quick calendar for a particular event or whatever, and you want to check out this list if you do. Also reminded me, Martin, that last summer we did a Wells Tech bonus Wells Tech Goodness episode on Google Calendar, which I make use of quite a lot, and you certainly could use Google Calendar as well to do your school year planning. And I even have a link to include in the show notes, so I have 7 reasons to use Google Calendar. So lots and lots of calendar options there for you to pick and choose from, and hopefully they'll be of use maybe to the teachers and to others who are doing planning at this time of year.
Yeah, and calendars are kind of the nerve center of a congregation or a school, and that is one of the big reasons that a member or a parent would come to a website, is to check that calendar. So it's worth the energy to put in and get a system that's going to work for you and use it. So I was just consulting with the congregation last night down in, Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin, and one of the issues that was raised by one of the church secretaries was just the issues that she was having between maintaining a online calendar and a paper calendar. And boy, is there any better way to try and figure out how to, because a lot of people still want the paper calendar or paper newsletter, but you really don't want to maintain a paper one and an online one. So, you know, were there ways to make that pain go away? And, you know, I don't think there's any great solution, but I think there are some solutions that are better than others. So you must deal with that too in Sleepy Eye, right?
Boy, do I have a story to tell you. My pastor husband, who's on vacation this week, is in the midst of programming a macro that'll take the Google Calendar for our church and school and put it in a printable format. So that's how he's spending his vacation time, believe it or not, exactly solving that problem. So
sweet.
Google Calendar is a wonderful solution for us for our school and church calendar online, but the print quality isn't always the greatest. It smushes things together a little too much for our preferences, but he's in the process right
now. So what's it going to output to?
I think a Word document in landscape format, and then you could adjust the table. Yep.
Sweet.
So
I think he might have some customers for that.
Yeah, there you go. We'll see how far he makes it, how long the vacation lasts.
Good for you, Kevin.
Yeah.
All right. My pick is something that I've picked in the past, but I've made some new and improved features, or added some new and improved features to it, and we'll stick with the Google theme, and that is Picasa. They're on version 3.6 at this point, and Picasa is basically a tool that allows you to organize your photos and actually do video as well. any kind of media can go in here. And one thing I like about Picasa, two things I like about Picasa, is it allows you to keep your photos in place. So you don't have to put them into this database. It just basically scans your hard drive and says, hey, do you want to include this? Do you want to include this? So you can keep your own folder structure. And it just organizes them. You can tag them. It has face recognition like all the good ones do now. iPhoto does that on the Mac as well. Does a really nice job. It'll go through and index everything so you can say, show me all the pictures of Debbie or Aaron or, you know, whatever family member of choice, or grandma or grandpa. And that's kind of cool too, because very often you want to see pictures that way, or pictures by location. It'll do some geotagging for you as well. And the other thing I like about it is the online side of this, which uses the Google servers, so you've got a lot of storage space, and adding storage space, because pictures can get large, is fairly inexpensive. Let me see if I can look up the cost here. So if I wanted to add storage, you get 1 gigabyte, which is not a lot to begin with, but if you wanted to upgrade your storage, Google would charge you $5 a year for 20 gigabytes or $20 a year for 80. And so what the direction I'm moving is that this would be my online backup, you know, for my photos. Plus, you get the added benefit of having all your photos online. So it'll store the originals in their original size. If you take raw photos, it'll upload those, although it does convert those to JPEGs. So I think it converts everything to JPEG for in the translation here. But it does them at full resolution, so that you can see a thumbnail online, or you can print them from online, or your relatives or friends can go online and say, hey, give me, I want that one, that one, and that one. So if you got grandma out there who wants a real paper, you know, a real photo, she can click on this and it'll actually create a photo for her. Or you can have one sent, or you can use all the online services as well. You can go all the way up to 1 terabyte, or even more probably, but that's $256 a year for a terabyte. But this is a great repository for your photos. You get an offline copy, you get an online copy, and then, you know, if you ever want to, obviously there's apps for the iPhone, for the Android, all those smartphones can obviously have access to these photos as well. But Google's done a nice job with this. I think Google has bought this technology and they've kind of made it their own and added their own flair to it. But it works nicely with kind of my workflow, and it kind of came to mind because we were out in New Mexico last week, or we actually just got back on Tuesday, and took a ton of photos. And this was a great way to get them online, share them, you know, with family members even before we got back, and also have them backed up so that they weren't just sitting on the card, the CF card in my camera, or the SD card in my wife's camera. And in fact, we took photos from three different cameras. I had my smartphone, I had my my Canon, and then Debbie had her point and shoot. And we just put them all in Picasa and uploaded them, and it just made sense of them all, and we could add captions and the whole bit. So just made life a little bit easier, and then the whole syncing part online is really a nice bonus to this.
Sounds like a good solution. We did a similar thing when we were all together in Mississippi for my dad's funeral, but I used actually Walmart.com's photo.
Oh, really? Okay.
And what's nice about that is you can send it from the website to any Walmart throughout the country, mm-hmm. To their 1 hour print, and go and pick up your pictures an hour later.
Right.
So that was a really nice tool for us.
And you can store them up there?
You can share the albums if you want, you know, give people credentials to get access to it.
Yep.
And then also they have some collage building tools and things like that. So I actually uploaded a lot of pictures, made a collage, printed a whole ton of those to mm-hmm. share with people and stuff. So lots of fun tools there. But I'm thinking that you don't have the option of 1 terabyte of storage there. I'm not quite sure where they cut you
There's
off.
There's probably some kind of limit, yeah. Plus you've got photo editing, you know,
right.
features within Picasa.
Right.
That,
this is not nearly as robust. But it was a good solution for the printing capabilities of mm-hmm. the local Walmart.
Right.
So.
Cool. Very cool. So lots of options out there, but that's the one that I'm using at this point, and works on Windows or Mac, so there's probably even a Picasa for Linux at this point. I haven't checked that out, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was. Mm-hmm. Community feedback.
And we have quite a bit of it, starting out with some Digo tags from one of our favorite listeners, Jason Schmidt, who's at Gethsemane in Omaha, Nebraska, and he shared a couple of interesting links. The first one is an e-book written by a fellow named Jeremy Renner. It's called A to Z Cool Tools, and literally goes through the alphabet with a lot of Web 2.0 tools, kind of teacher-centric, I believe. And one of the specific tools that Jason tagged from that book is a site called Zamzar, which is a free online file conversion. And so if you're looking for a way to convert from one format to another, maybe that's a place to look. I did try it out, and a lot of pop-ups came up on my screen. So you might be cautious of pop-ups from Zamzar, but may give you a conversion that you hadn't had access to before. So you might want to check that out, as well as read through this quick read of A to Z Cool Tools.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we have a voicemail. We love it when our listeners call in to our Google Voice number. Especially entertaining to us, Martin, is that Google Voice translates for us. So they called you Mike in the process.
That's right.
Got my
name right.
They
got you
right.
Yeah.
I like that. So we'll hear from Gail, who's one of our favorite listeners from Emmanuel in
London.
A
regular contributor. We have her on once a month, although she's taking the summer off from our road trip, but she's still actively listening, and she shared with us a voicemail through Google Voice. And while we are on the topic, Sally, what is that number?
Oh, that's
if somebody else would like to would also like to leave us a voicemail. We actually love voicemails. We get to hear the voice of our listeners as opposed to this mysterious person behind the keyboard.
That number is 405-4-WELLS, which is 367-9357.
Very good. So I'm gonna because we've got additional folks in the studio today. I'm gonna have to put my mic up next to my speaker, so hopefully this will come through loud and clear. But maybe we can fix that in post if necessary. So here's Gail's voicemail.
Hi, Martin and Sally. This is Gail. Just got finished listening to the podcast from last week, in which Martin pointed out the fact that there's a discount on the Android phone that he spoke about in that podcast. I think it was 22% or some number like that. Just to play the devil's advocate here, I just want to make people aware that if you're still interested in an iPhone, I don't know if people are aware of this, but educators can automatically get a 15% discount each month on your voice and data through AT&T, of course, if you have an iPhone. You have to know the IRU fan number when you talk to your representative, and that number is 84334. So if you want to give that a try for already a user, an iPhone user, or if you would like to talk to me more about it, give me a call at Emmanuel Lutheran, 920-982-5444. Just thought some listener might appreciate that information. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you, Gail. And hopefully that came through loud and clear. Great information. I did not know that.
All those perks of being a teacher. I love those things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing, Gail. Next up, we heard from Pastor Rob Gunther, who we mentioned in one of our recent shows. He had written asking about how to do double time on his audiobooks and iTunes and on his iPod, and we were able to provide some information about changing the media type in iTunes, and he said that was really simple and appreciated that. He also wrote to share with us his experience with Quizlet, which is something I mentioned from an ebook that was in our discussion on the last podcast. And he said that there's also an iPhone iPod Touch app for Quizlet called Flashcard Touch. And he has his catechism students doing that. They all have eye touches.
Cool.
So he developed catechism flashcards and from the Quizlet website, and they use it to review for their test. So very awesome ministry application for your iPod Touch. Love
now,
that.
He doesn't say how many students he has.
Yeah, but he says they all have it.
Isn't that amazing?
That's awesome.
We've talked in the past about handheld computing and how that plays in education. Here's just an example of great use of that, and probably going to be a topic that we'll revisit a number of times on the show here as we get more people seeing that you know, with the iPad and all this other, you know, iPod touches and such, that there's probably going to be an explosion here of these kinds of devices. And I think that's something that educators need to be aware of.
Absolutely. Exciting use there. Lastly, he said, interesting invitation we got here, Martin. He was listening to one of our shows recently where we joked about going to Hawaii for a seminar. I told you I was all up for
a Hawaii trip.
Yep. He's actually just recently taken a call to Alaska, so he invited us to come to Alaska to do presentations or whatever. So I think I'll defer to you to make the Alaska trip, although that would be a nice trip to make
as well. It's not that far a hop from Hawaii to Alaska.
Oh, okay. Do them both in one.
That's right.
Swoop.
That's right.
So exciting to hear from you, Pastor Gunther. We wish you the Lord's blessings on that major move you're making from the East Coast. I believe he's in North Carolina right now. So
yep. You've got a different set of technology challenges, I'm sure, in Alaska with the distance there and the distance sometimes between churches and members, too.
Yeah. Next up, we had an email from David Schumann, who's a regular listener from Peace in Janesville, Wisconsin, and he wrote in to share a little trick that he figured out. He had a pretty low-resolution JPEG image of a logo, and he wanted to make it scalable to convert it to a vector graphic that he could upsize, and he was able to do that using a free tool called Inkscape. Inkscape has a scan BMP to vector function, and with a little tweaking, he was able to get his image into a vector format, giving him a scalable drawing.
Yep.
And of course, the price tag was great. He said Inkscape is free and costs nothing, so that's a wonderful tip for our listeners. We just recently talked with was it Steven Stelter who was talking about logo design and the fact that you'd want to have vector graphics in order to do scalable stuff. And so that's a great tip techies in our audience will appreciate.
Yeah, just a little bit more on that. If you're not familiar with the difference between a bitmap and a vector graphic, bitmap basically is made up of many, many pixels. And obviously, the more pixels, the higher the resolution and the larger you can scale it. But it does have a limit. So if you wanted to scale it to a church sign or a billboard or something, you know, poster size, you're probably going to get some pixelation. Vector images are based on math equations, essentially, that draw the image every time that image is loaded so they can be scaled infinitely. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to do a logo, you're going to want to make sure that it's created initially in a vector format. So Adobe Illustrator is probably the most popular tool that uses that. That format. And also when you are doing some of these conversions, Adobe Illustrator does have a conversion that'll take a bitmap and do the tracing as David mentioned here. In my experience, it's not perfect, but it's better than nothing. And maybe they've gotten better since I've done a lot of work with it, but because it guesses. You know, it basically looks at the outline and says, oh, this is a curve and this is a line and so on and so forth. So but I think that's a great tip, and I'm going to actually have to try that because there are certainly times where you're going to want to be able to scale it larger. Especially a lot of the images today are made for web, and they don't scale well at all beyond the screen size, even if you're trying to put it on a letterhead or something like that. So.
Just had a recent experience with our school 125th anniversary, and I was able to find a good stock image to use as our basic image for all of our design work, but ultimately found out that MLC can print large outdoor banners and things like that, and I wanted to go probably 5 foot by 5 foot, and that's probably a little larger than the resolution I had. So,
right.
They did it, and we got decent results and everything, but having this kind of tool would be a real positive.
It would have made it a lot sharper. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good. So. Thanks for the tip, David.
Yep. Next up, Martin, you had an email from Tom Hausman and wanted to share an announcement from him.
Yeah. Tom Hausman used to be at Wisconsin Lutheran College. He's now over at Viterbo College or University in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and they've got an open position, so we're just kind of advertising the spot for him, an instructional support and design specialist. They've got, it's a full-time position, and they are looking for people right now. So if you have a background in that, in instructional and information technology, especially as it relates to instructional design, there's a Blackboard component. There's all kinds of descriptions here that we can provide information for you. If you want to find out more information, do we have contact here? Probably just contact me. You know, just send an email over to myself, or post a comment on the Wells Tech website, and we will get you this description. If you are interested, or if you know of somebody else who might be interested in this instructional support and design specialist position at Viterbo. Tom is a nice guy. I've known him for a number of years now, since he was at WLC, he would be great to work with and work for. So let us know.
Very good. And one final community feedback from Perry Lund, who's at Grace in Oskaloosa, Iowa. And he listened to our last show when we visited New Ulm, Minnesota, and talked with Heath Dauberpool about the Infinite Campus student management system. And he wrote to us on the website and said, "Great interview on school management software. I'm partial to PowerSchool, but fully agree that Pearson, who develops PowerSchool, now has left school management lunch behind. I know my wife has asked on multiple occasions for PowerSchool to pick up the ball in that area. However, PowerSchool is wonderful in their remote support, their move to Oracle database over Sybase, and their customizable reports. Parents enjoy the portal to check on the kids, and PowerTeacher continues to improve. Just my 2 cents or so." So, Perry, we appreciate always you contributing your 2 cents to the Wells Tech podcast, and thanks for the information on PowerSchool.
Yep. There are a lot of schools using a lot of different software packages, so we'd love that kind of feedback, because I know those schools that don't have those packages in place, I think, are at least thinking about it, because, you know, hot lunch is just one, you know, one item. Do you use something at Sleepy Eye?
We don't, but we probably should.
Yeah. So. Yeah, absolutely. So thanks for the feedback. Well, next week, Sally, we're not quite sure where we're going, right? It'll be
our
a surprise.
Bags and heading
out. It'll be chef's surprise.
There you go.
So good to have you. This was a great experience. I'm gonna kind of miss this next week when we have to go back to our separated by
the
400
virtual.
Miles approach. Mm-hmm. So very good to have you, and great to have you in the studios. So when do you head back?
I think we're gonna be leaving on Saturday morning. My husband's supposed to preach Saturday night, so
okay.
Got to make the trip home in time for church Saturday night.
Hopefully he's got his conversion tool all wrapped up and ready to go, so that'll be a subject for next
program.
Week's conversation as well. So, all right, let's close the show with the music of Michael Schrader, I Do Believe, from his album The Way. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
I do believe in your miracles, and I do believe that you're from above. I do believe in your deity, that Jesus is God's one and only Son. Some have no faith, lose their way in a world so blind. They put their faith in their intellect, so they cannot see the light. But I believe you're the one. My redemption and forgiveness of sins is found through you. I do believe in your mercy. 'Cause I'm saved by the grace through faith in you. Some put their faith in themselves, they chase a worldly life, but it leads to death. So my treasure is, it's in you that I have life. Yes, I believe you're the one. Would come, I believe God is love, and I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Savior has come. And I believe in the Almighty God the Father, the Holy Spirit works faith in you. I believe that Jesus is the Christ, and he paid the price to save me and you. Yes, I believe you're the one. I would come, I believe God is love, and I believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Savior has come. The Savior has come.